I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to be talking about the National Rifle Association convention that is back in Indianapolis this weekend and the related protest regarding gun violence. My guests will be Indiana University Maurer School of Law Professor Jody Madera, Director of Guns Down America, Igor Volsky, and Moms Demand Action and Everytown volunteer Rachel Guglielmo. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are going to be talking about the convention this weekend of the National Rifle Association that is back here in Indianapolis and the related protests regarding gun violence opposition. If you want to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Indiana University Maurer School of Law Professor Jody Madera, Director of Guns Down America, Igor Volsky, and Moms Demand Action and Everytown volunteer Rachel Guglielmo. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you all here. And I should say, all three of my guests are on the phone today, which means we have a limited number of phone lines. So I know people are going to want to join the conversation. I would suggest that you do so either by sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or reaching out to us through social media. So I'm going to ask your thoughts on sort of an overall scene setting question. This is kind of an interesting time for the National Rifle Association in that there have been many reports about the organization's financial difficulties. It's been running deficits apparently as large as $40 million a year. And there was an interesting piece in The New Yorker, I guess they did it in partnership with The Trace, that indicates that the some of the financial irregularities, I'm not going to go into great detail, I'll ask you about those, might actually jeopardize the organization's status as a charity, a 501c3. How much credibility do you place on those kinds of reports, and what is the significance of them? I'll start with Jody first.
Thank you. Well, I actually place quite a bit of stock in them. You know, it's come out that, you know, really the NRA's core purpose is no longer its core purpose. Now, as the New Yorker reported, it seems to be mainly a media company, right? Its core purpose, you know, back in the 1800s, early 1900s, with the Citizens Marksmanship Program, used to be to produce riflemanship, you know, as a duty of citizenship. But now it's reduced gun safety education and training to less than 10% of its total budget. So I believe its core purpose is under threat from the inside.
Igor, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think what's happening here is that we're finally seeing the kind of internal problems, the kind of internal mismanagement of payments, sweetheart deals, giving special, very large payments to family members of NRA officials. And we know that, you know, the NRA itself is concerned about it. They're having an emergency board meeting at the conference, at the convention this weekend. So it's a real problem. And frankly, it comes during a time when we not only see gun ownership shrinking in the United States, but also as the middle has shifted on the gun issue in America. And you see the NRA with some of the lowest approval ratings that it's had in quite some time. And also you see both corporations abandoning the NRA and the industry, but also Americans, particularly young people, embracing much bolder solutions to reduce gun deaths.
Rachel.
Well, these reports are largely consistent with what we observe on the ground. Moms Demand Action is a grassroots organization. We're very active in our state legislature here and also in our communities, promoting educational programs and raising awareness about gun safety. And what we see is that there's a very sharp divide between the agenda that is being promoted by the NRA leadership and at our legislature through the NRA lobbyists, and what people, gun owners, Republicans, Democrats, what they believe and what they think is sensible. There's a very high level of support in Indiana among Hoosiers of all political affiliations for sensible gun safety measures like background checks on every gun sale, but that's not the agenda that's being promoted in the legislature.
And I should say at this point that we issued an invitation or invitations to representatives from the National Rifle Association to appear on this program, and those invitations were not accepted. So what do you think brought us to this moment? Because, for a long time here in the United States, particularly in this part of the country, the NRA was both considered immovable object and irresistible force. And now we're seeing vulnerability on the part of the organization that would not have been dreamed possible even 10 years ago. What accounts for that? Rachel, I'll start with you.
Well, I suppose one could speculate that the leadership of the organization has been more interested in pursuing profits to be gained from a guns everywhere agenda and less attentive to the kinds of measures that would put some limits on where, when, and how people should be carrying guns, for example, in schools.
I agree.
So where those two interests have not coincided, the NRA leadership has consistently opted for profits over safety.
Iger, how much of this is also the fact that there has been a significant mobilization of opposition to the gun lobbies? The level of organization is something we have not seen before.
Yeah, John, I think that's right. I mean, Rachel points to the fact that the NRA has really become an extension of the gun industry. I think that's absolutely correct. It's part of the reason why they fought so hard to allow companies to ship guns overseas without having to jump through some of the hoops that they had to in the past. It's also part of the reason why they worked hard to prevent reforms in New Zealand and other places around the world. They want to keep markets open for the firearms industry. But the second piece is what you point to, that the strength of the gun control movement is really significant in more ways than one, right? After Parkland, what I think happened is for one of the first times you saw the survivors of that attack take all of the grief and all of the sorrow they felt and channel that into real action. And that inspired a lot of Americans. And the second thing they did is they didn't really carry all of the baggage that a lot of advocates, a lot of our politicians carry over from the 1990s, right? This sense that if you're going to talk about gun control, that you must first talk about how much you respect the Second Amendment, how much you respect responsible gun owners, and then maybe if you have time, you should mention some background checks. That's not what's happening anymore. You have advocates talking about the fact that it's the guns that are the problem, and if we're going to solve this crisis, we need to build a future with fewer guns. And as a result, you see American corporations really responding to this and recognizing that to be associated with the NRA, to be associated with the gun industry, is a real threat to their corporate identity. And so they're now leading the way, helping lead the way in building a future with fewer guns. So I think all of those things are related, and it's part of the reason why the NRA is really struggling.
Jody, I'll let you finish.
Sure. I would just say it's increasingly out of touch with what most Americans want. You know, most Americans do support the Second Amendment, but they don't want to get rid of guns, but they want to increase gun safety, and they want to talk about guns in a common sense manner. And so what's actually interesting is it's, you know, the NRA is increasingly caught between a rock and a hard place. The rock being, you know, I think the increasingly hard, increasingly vocal, increasingly successful gun control movement. And the hard place being the really extreme members of its base for whom the NRA is now too soft, for example, in the recent passage of, you know, Trump's bump stock executive order and how the NRA has handled that. But I think it's sort of a mess. It's even contradicting many messages that it made earlier in the 1990s. And the irony is, of course, this comes at a time when gun laws across the country are being liberalized at amazing rates.
We are talking about the NRA convention here in the city and the protest and opposition that is meeting the convention. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what Liz has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Liz, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm calling in because I live downtown. So I have the unique privilege of being able to see the State House and our legislators and then also see the guests who are in town for the NRA convention. And today, yesterday actually, as I was leaving my apartment building, someone was checking into an extended stay suite that's in my building. And they had cases and cases of firearms, and they were locked. And I paused and I thought for a moment, and I was scared to see this, but I thought, I bet they're all licensed and they're all locked. So there's nothing I can do to prevent this person from having these firearms in the place that I live. And that really shook me, and it made me scared and upset to have this being hosted in our city in Indianapolis.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing that. Liz, Iger, I'm going to ask you, to respond to that in a general way, because that's one of the elements that comes out of this is that people are frustrated, many of them, at least that I have talked to, that picking up on Jody's point that we can't even have a discussion about guns and gun safety. And the second is that they feel powerless at some level to indicate, okay, this is something that disturbs me.
Yeah, I think that sentiment is very real. And I think that there's certainly some number of Americans that make up the NRA's base that really subscribe to all of its propaganda about the Second Amendment, about the fact that any kind of gun control measure will lead to a slippery slope. But I actually come to this from a place of optimism. And the reason is that if you look at polls, just anecdotal stories of the travels that I've done around the country talking to gun owners, what you begin to see is that while the NRA is certainly the loudest voice in the room, they don't speak, as Rachel was pointing out, for the majority of gun owners. That gun owners not only support reforms like background checks, but they also support things like firearm licensing. The general idea of raising the standard of gun ownership in America, of changing the environment in America, of how guns are produced and how guns are purchased. These, I think, are bolder solutions than our lawmakers, even our champion lawmakers, have generally discussed. But we're now in a period in this country where they have a majority support, and again, not just of Americans generally, but of gun owners specifically. And so, you know, the challenge, of course, remains of how do you turn down the volume on the NRA, and how do you lift up the voices of everyday gun owners who understand that that the Second Amendment right is not absolute, that the balance that we have in this country between the rights of the Second Amendment and community safety are entirely out of whack, And that, I think, lifting up those voices, those majority voices, is something that we're really going to have to tackle and work on if we're going to hope to solve the crisis we face.
And that is something that we will talk more about. We'll also talk about where the law is on all of these questions. If you are just joining us, we are talking about the National Rifle Association convention that is back in Indianapolis and the related gun violence opposition that is protesting that. My guests are Indiana University Maurer School of Law Professor Jody Madera, Director of Guns Down America, Igor Volsky, and Moms Demand Action in Every Town volunteer Rachel Guglielmo. If you want to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the National Rifle Association Convention back here in Indiana and the related protest opposition to the NRA. My guests are Indiana University Maurer School of Law Professor Jody Madera, Director of Guns Down America, Igor Volsky, and Moms Demand Action in Every Town volunteer, Rachel Guglielmo. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what this listener named George has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. George, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I think it's valuable for your program to get kind of a opposing viewpoint. And I think that a lot of the opinions expressed by your guests are typical of the kind of left anti-gun echo chamber and are entirely off base as to why the NRA is waning in influence.
And why would that be, in your view?
From my perspective and those of many other gun owners, the NRA has become too, as one of your commenters suggested, has become too corporate and too much of a media company and not a lobbying organization or a safety organization like their mandate would seem to be. Many former members of the NRA, like myself, are joining with the Gun Owners of America or Jews for the Protection of Firearm Ownership, which I have done because they are much more in line with general gun owners' opinions about lobbying for gun rights in the United States.
Let me say, I said at the top of the show, but I probably ought to reiterate it, we did issue invitations to representatives from the National Rifle Association.
Well, I'm sure you did. I'm not saying it's your fault as a host to...
I want to make that clear to the audience that that the goal here is to have a discussion. So let me ask this, since and I realize you're not a member of the NRA anymore because you said that. Well, while I've got you on the air, does it frustrate you as a gun owner that what is a fairly extreme view, one at least as far as I can tell, that's not supported by constitutional law or anything like that, has become representative of the views of gun owners all across the country, that there is no way we can deal or sit down and have a rational conversation about these gun-related tragedies?
Well, I agree that it does not appear that we can have a rational conversation, but I don't think that's the fault of gun owners who believe that the Second Amendment does enumerate an individual right. Anti-gun organizations seem to want to fight that point over and over again, and it has been, established by the Supreme Court. So I really don't see that, supporting individual right for gun ownership is an extreme view. Matter of fact, I think that most gun owners have far more gun right supporting views than that. For example, there are many laws in this country that clearly infringe on the personal or individual right to own a gun. And it seems to be a one-way push from the left to erode and erode and erode. It's not a compromise, and it's not really a conversation. It's just a push to continue to erode personal liberties.
Okay, by assuming, obviously, the decision you're talking about with the Supreme Court is the Heller decision, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And in that, and this is for purposes of information, then I'll ask Jody Madera, who knows far more about the law than I do. Even Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, I believe, said that did not mean that no regulation was possible whatsoever, that the ruling should not have been interpreted that way.
Right. I think one of the key issues...
Thanks very much for the call, George.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. I'm sorry, Jody, I cut you off.
Oh, that's okay. I think one of the key issues from Heller is just, you know, how it's borne out. I mean, so the decision is now 11 years old, and realistically, it has been criticized. It's sort of like the Roe versus Wade of modern times, you know, and Scalia's words have come under attack as being, for example, too large a loophole to not allow the individual rights to be fully realized. And so that is one of the issues, actually, that the Supreme Court will likely take up in New York Rifle and Pistol if New York does not change its law, thus mooting the case.
We have gotten an email from a listener named Kevin, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Kevin writes, the NRA likes to point to good guys with guns, but it never recognizes law-abiding, gun-carrying black Americans for doing good with a gun, and it never criticizes police for shooting law-abiding, gun-carrying black citizens when they've done no wrong. See Philando Castile. A large part of the conversation I never hear when it comes to gun safety is what happens after bullets hit their intended targets. Some of the bullets continue to travel. What happens when a gun is fired and a bullet does not hit its intended target? What happens when the unintended target causes a bullet to ricochet and injure, kill someone who is innocent? Are these the kinds of conversations, Rachel, that we need to start having?
Oh, absolutely. We strongly advocate for discussion about gun safety alongside the conversation about gun rights. Your previous caller puzzled me a little bit by suggesting that all of people on this call are anti-gun, because each one of us has said from our respective viewpoints that we don't take issue with gun rights. We are simply asking that gun rights be balanced with a concern for gun safety in many of the kinds of situations that your email alluded to. We have programs to encourage safe storage of firearms in the home, to reduce suicide and school shootings and unintentional shootings. We have programs to promote awareness of Indiana's red flag law, which allows a gun to be removed from someone considered at risk of injuring themselves or others because they're in a situation of crisis of some sort. So those types of programs are incredibly important, and it would really behoove our legislators to get on board with supporting related legislation rather than legislation that further erodes concern for gun safety. I think your caller was misguided in supposing that that is the drift of legislation in Indiana. It's just not been the case. We have had really good proposals made in Indiana legislature this year to promote safe storage and background checks, but they were not given a hearing. The kinds of bills that we heard included bills to suggest or incentivize the training of teachers. And that's just not in step with what most Hoosiers consider to be a reasonable concern for gun safety.
Iger, is Indiana out of step with the rest of the country, or is this part of a national movement? Because Rachel's correct. Most of the bills actually are about loosening gun laws rather than tightening them.
Yeah, it's been a mixed pattern across the country. We've certainly seen some states tighten their gun laws. And we also know that those that have tighter, stronger laws, that they have fewer gun deaths. And by the way, gun deaths of every kind, from firearm suicides to homicides, to accidental shootings, to police shootings, both you shooting at police and police shooting at you. So these laws are having an impact. If we look at Indiana specifically, and this is also representative of national trends, about 60% of firearm deaths in 2016 in Indiana, 60%, John, were suicides. And of those 60%, almost all of them who chose a firearm to commit suicide were white males. This is a big problem, firearm suicide in our country. And it's a problem that's growing year after year after year. And part of the reason of why that is because we now in America have more guns than people. We have about 393 million guns in circulation. And frankly, you know, what we know from the experiences of other nations, what we know from experiences here in the United States, is that where there are more guns, where guns are more easily accessible, there will be more gun deaths. And so, you know, as Rachel pointed out, it's not that we're arguing that there should not be guns or that we're anti-gun. We're simply making the common sense argument that we need to change the environment in which guns are purchased and produced for everybody. Because when we do that, as we've seen all around the world, we can literally save thousands of lives. And if George, the caller, I believe his name is George, you know, sees himself as a responsible gun owner, he should have no problem in obtaining a firearm license, in registering that firearm, in storing that firearm. And that's simply, you know, that's simply what we're calling for.
We've gotten a question from a listener named Alexa via Facebook. And again, if you want to join the conversation via Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Alexa writes, with gun violence having such a traumatic effect on Indianapolis right now, how does having the NRA convention in Indy help the neighborhoods and folks most heavily hit by gun violence? What, if anything, are the NRA folks doing at the convention to help rectify this despairing situation? Jody, I'm going to throw that one to you because, you know, that does seem to be a, you know, a new line of discussion in this debate is that, you know, the National Rifle Association, other gun lobby organizations owe something to the communities and not just to their constituency.
Well, that's a really interesting concept. And if I can draw an analogy, you know, to the opioid crisis and how, you know, the Sackler family is under siege and is, you know, their philanthropic donations are being thrown back in their faces. And, you know, they're under siege from, I believe, 1,600 lawsuits currently. So just a word about that. Currently, I think nationally and in many states, we are prohibited from seeking redress from the NRA, from gun sellers, from gun manufacturers. And the last time, you know, what really precipitated that was, you know, many states and many cities have tried to obtain reparations from gun manufacturers who are selling to gun stores who negligently sold to criminals, that kind of thing, to hold them accountable under negligence law. And that created a backlash that, you know, set in place a very rigid structure of rules about when we can sue and when we can't, and by and large, the rule is that we can't sue. In addition, we have laws that prevent us from directly talking about guns, you know, from attempts to pass a law in Florida that was ultimately overturned to prevent physicians counseling patients, to a law we have here in Indiana prohibiting employers from asking employees if they have firearms in the car in the parking lot without a public safety exception. And I think, you know, what this is a really a lockdown situation, right, with rhetoric about guns. And so if you can't talk about guns, you can't talk about the harm that they inflict upon society when in the hands of the wrong people. And I think this is a conversation that we currently can't have under the law.
I'm going to ask all three of you, and I'll start with Rachel on this. Is there a play? Because it always strikes me when we have this conversation. Jody's been a guest on this show before when we talk about guns and gun laws, and you know, I cannot compare the chasm sort of separating the sides here to anything other than the Grand Canyon. It it feels like at times. Is there a way or a place we can engage the middle ground here and you know, bring people together to have these kinds of rational discussions?
I'm going to say an absolutely enthusiastic yes to that. That's what this is, the divide that our organization has been chipping away at for over 5 years now, and we're making considerable progress. We have a lot of gun owners in our organization. We are building relationships at our state house with our legislators, and we're finding that it's just not the case that there aren't legislators who are not responsive to this this argument and this conversation. We're finding in our communities that when we talk about issues like gun safety, like safe storage of firearms, like red flag laws, we have wide support, broad support. People are eager to have a civil exchange on the issue. I think that they have felt frustrated at the lack of space for that conversation, and that's what our organization has been working to carve out. So I wanted to respond to your earlier caller who felt powerless. It's important to know that there are organizations working to reverse this trend, and it's not necessary to feel powerless. Your voice can be part of the process of turning this around.
Iger.
Yeah, I agree with Rachel. As I've said, I find a lot of common ground with gun owners, but we need to have the conversation in an honest way, right? So saying that the Second Amendment provides an absolute right to gun ownership, no questions asked, is just false. And John, as you yourself pointed out, that's not what the majority opinion from Justice Scalia said. So if we're going to come at this debate from two separate fact patterns, then yes, it's going to be difficult. But I think that that's not where most gun owners are. And so, again, I'm actually fairly optimistic. And then in terms of the powerlessness piece, I think part of the challenge we're facing is that legislative change, especially in the federal level, is hard. It takes a long time, but people are dying now every single day from guns. And so at Guns Down America, we think a lot about how can folks plug into different pieces and different campaigns. And so one of the efforts that we recently launched is called Is Your Bank Loaded? isyourbankloaded.org. And listeners can go there to push their banks to stop doing business with the gun industry until that industry stops producing dangerous militarized weapons for the civilian market, as they've been doing since the late 1980s. So there's different ways folks can plug in on the state level and the local level, on corporate campaigns that are pushing corporations to do their part in helping build a future with fewer guns. And I think all of that, as we started the program talking about the NRA's troubles, all of that is really having an impact.
Jody, I'm going to give you the last word on this round, but you've got about 45 seconds to have it.
Sure. No, I think it's important to open up the door to having more conversations. I mean, I'll tell, just a very quick personal anecdote. So I teach Second Amendment law, and, through conversing with lawyers who practice Second Amendment law, through conversing with legislators, through conversing with gun owners, and through conversing, with people on the quote-unquote gun control side, I think I began myself to walk that middle path, and I hadn't known much about it beforehand. And we're now opening a conversation to where people can, for example, ask their neighbors if before their kids go over and play at their house, do you have firearms? Are they stored safely? And that's just a routine question we should have.
We are talking about the NRA convention that is back in Indianapolis this weekend and the related opposition and protests regarding the convention and the NRA. My guests are Indiana University Maurer School of Law Professor Jody Madera, Director of Guns Down America, Iger Volsky, and Moms Demand Action in Every Town volunteer Rachel Guglielmo. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about the arrival of the National Rifle Association back in Indianapolis this weekend and the concerns, protest, opposition related to the NRA. My guests are Indiana University Maurer School of Law Professor Jody Madera, Director of Guns Down America Igor Volsky, and Moms Demand Action and Everytown Volunteer Rachel Guglielmo. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so in several ways. You could send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what Dave has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
As I told the screener when I called, I've got sort of a centrist view on weapons in general. I was raised around guns. There were always guns in the house, but they were always for target practice or hunting rabbits or squirrels. My dad never considered a weapon in the house as a way of home protection, at least not verbally. But I've worked around people for years that, without mincing words, were just absolutely nuts over guns, including spending every penny they could make to buy guns. I was told one time that when President Obama came into office, that Obama was going to kick my door in the middle of the night and take all my guns away. He hasn't shown up yet, so I'm assuming he's not coming. I have nothing against guns. Guns are, at least in my opinion, a tool, and it can be used incorrectly or correctly. And I'm always suspicious of views on either end that start the screaming, abolish all guns, or everybody needs to own 100 guns. And I don't believe that that's the consensus with the mainstream. I think everybody says, yeah, you've got the right to carry a gun, but I don't think anyone thinks you need a half a dozen AR-15s in the house. So I don't know where that leaves me, except just kind of wondering where this whole thing will go as an elderly guy. Mm-hmm. And for the response.
All right. Thanks very much for the call and for sharing that, Dave.
Thank you.
So, and Dave kind of alludes to a dynamic. I think it was Iger early on in the show who said that, the percentage of gun owners in this country has been decreasing. And the studies I have seen show that. But the number of guns being owned actually is going up because while fewer Americans have them, they do seem to be stockpiling them more. Is that a source of concern, Jody?
I think so. I mean, that's what the NRA really, if you read The New Yorker, if you read recent news reports, that's what they're really driving at, is opening up new markets. And the opening new markets could be, children's firearms, cricket rifles. It could be, firearms for women. And again, I think, part of the legal scheme we have seen is protecting that market from suit, by immunizing certain stakeholders from negligence, for example.
We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Edward, or a comment more. And again, if you want to join the conversation via Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Edward writes, "Where are these imaginary numbers coming from? And Indiana has no red flag law. Stop referring to failing legislation as if it's already law." Rachel, could you speak to where some of the numbers we have referenced are coming from and talk about where the law is?
Well, I'm not sure which numbers your caller is referring to, but I can certainly confirm that there is a red flag law in Indiana. It's called the Jake Laird Law, and it was adopted quite some time ago after a pretty disturbing case of a police officer getting shot and killed and several other police officers injured after guns were returned to a gentleman who had
exhibited a disturbing pattern of behavior and had been discovered to have a large arsenal of guns, but there was no alternative but to return those guns to him after he was released from care. And he subsequently went out and shot this police officer or multiple police officers. And so the legislature adopted the Jake Laird law to try to address that sort of hole in our legal system. It's considered an exemplary law. Many other states have adopted it in the wake of the Parkland shooting when it was recognized that that person had also exhibited a disturbing pattern of behavior and should not have had those guns that he used to commit that atrocity. I can respond to specific questions about the numbers if I have more specific questions.
Yeah, we have yes, go ahead, Jody.
For those listeners who are curious, the Jake Laird Law does in fact exist, as Rachel said. It's Indiana Code 35-47-14, and it was put in place in 2005.
We have also an email question from a couple of listeners, James and Heidi. Again, if you want to join the conversation via email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. James and Heidi write, "We have no good studies about guns and impact on public health because decades ago Congress, in conjunction with the NRA, passed a law prohibiting the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, from doing the studies. Smoking is known to be harmful due to CDC studies. What would we know about guns and their impact if we could have studied this problem?" Iger, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I think the research ban is a serious problem. The studies that we do have come from universities across the country that really try to ask those hard questions and figure out which laws work, which laws don't, which laws work best. But we certainly need additional funding. You know, I also want to go back to what Dave said, a caller from earlier, when he talked about the NRA using fear to both help the industry sell more guns, but also increase its membership revenues. That's also a real problem. And I think that part of the reason why the lobby and the industry represents have been so successful is because they've really created an individual identity around gun ownership, that it's not just your right to own a gun, that it's also intertwined with who gun owners are, that they are incredibly patriotic, incredibly moral. All of that is part of a larger conservative identity, a larger political conservative identity that they have successfully, quite deliberately, built up through their magazines and through their communications with members. And that's part of why we see some group of Americans make up such a solid and loud base for the NRA, because they've connected with those members on a real emotional level. And so part of, you know, I actually just wrote a book about this also called Guns Down, that tries to offer a different identity, a different vision for the gun control movement to really take on what the NRA has been able to do over decades to maintain this kind of political power.
We've got a question from a listener named Kathy on Facebook. And again, you can join the conversation via Facebook. Find us at No Limits WFYI. Kathy writes, "Were any safe storage laws presented to the Indiana State Legislature this past session? I didn't hear of any." Then please ask Rachel how an interested party could become a member of Moms Demand Action. Is it only for moms? I'll tell you what, I'll ask Jody real quickly on the safe storage question and then throw it to Rachel to talk specifically about Moms Demand Action.
Yes, we did have actually several safe storage bills. We had safe storage, I believe, with Jim Merritt proposed, you know, Senator Merritt, as well as Senator Stoops. And again, they did not go anywhere.
And Rachel, the question about Moms Demand Action, if someone wants to get involved, how do they go about doing that?
Okay. Yeah, in fact, we supported those safe storage bills. Our moms were at the legislature pretty constantly throughout the legislative session, urging our legislators to give consideration to those bills. A bill like that might have prevented the two school shootings that occurred in Indiana just in the last year.
to join Moms Demand Action, which is open to mothers and fathers and brothers and uncles, and anyone who's concerned about gun violence and interested in getting involved and feeling less powerless about gun violence in the United States, can text JOIN to 64433. Or can look us up on Facebook or on the internet, momsdemandaction.org. We're on Facebook at momsdemandaction.in.
And Iger, I should give you the same opportunity to speak for your organization.
Well, thank you, John. My organization, Guns Down America, which is building a future with fewer guns, folks can go to gunsdownamerica.org. And I should also note for listeners that I'm going to be at the All Souls Unitarian Church in Indianapolis on Sunday at 1 p.m. Discussing some of these critical issues. And my book that just came out is called Guns Down, How to Defeat the NRA and Build a Safer Future with Fewer Guns.
We are talking about the National Rifle Association Convention here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Brent has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Brent, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello. Yes, you're on the air, Brent.
Yes, I'm a lifetime NRA. I'm a veteran. I'm a Floridian that's moved to Indiana. I am not what you classically have been commenting on, the professor, about the fear tactics of the NRA and the political power and all that. I've been a competitive shooter for a number of years. I'm responsible in the storage of my firearms. I think what we have is a consortium of problems. One is our criminal justice system, where we continually have perpetrators with crimes with firearms that have a rap sheet that would fill up a roll of toilet paper, and we're not solving that problem. Some of the statistics you cited, I have learned real close living in Illinois about the crime rate, particularly in Chicago and all, and the problem we're starting to have here. If you talk about demographics and violent crime and gangs and all, they call you a racist. I think if we're going to have a comprehensive, sit-down, logical approach to the solving of the problem, not the dissolving of the NRA, but the solving of our problems that's creating these situations. If you talk about kids in shooting up schools, before they looked at the mental health situations and the Columbine boys that were gothic and black raincoats and all. I mean, you got to be a complete idiot sitting in a school and recognize that you've got somebody that is atypical, that is a loner and things like that. As far as bump stocks, I never bought one. I thought that the federal government, under the auspices of the federal firearms, should have outlawed those because they stepped across the line in taking a complete semi-automatic rifle and making it into an automatic with that bump stock. And that was just a failure of our government to fulfill its obligation and safety to the American public. I really get disturbed about, take for instance, Washington, D.C. had a law that was struck down where you had to have, if you had a firearm, you couldn't keep the ammunition in the gun, nor could you store the ammunition close to the gun. That stood for a number of years, and then it went through the court system, and they struck it down. Those are bizarre approaches to the dissolvement of that. If you go back, I had an uncle that was in the Second World War, and the first things the Germans did when they occupied or in their own country is they went down to the county courthouse and got a listing of all the arms and gathered all the arms. Now, I'm not a person that is utterly concerned, but we keep using, and it is a fact of history around the world. You look at Australia turning their guns in, and then the association of the increase in crime.
Brent,
gun ownership is the answer.
Let me
stop being a knee-jerk reaction to firearms and polarization of groups that probably have never had any experience with firearms themselves.
Brent, I'm gonna have to jump in here because I want to give our panelists a chance to respond to your points. Thank you very much for the call and for making those arguments. Iger, I'll start with you.
You know, I'll say to Brent that I appreciate his beginning of the call where he promised not to fearmonger, but then of course he ended on the fear that if you were to pass gun control laws, we would become Nazi Germany. So I think that's a bit difficult, but I do hear his point about responsible gun ownership, and I don't disagree with it. And my argument is we need to raise the standards for gun ownership in America and ensure that if you're going to own a gun, you can prove to your neighbors, to your community, that you could do that responsibly. That's all I'm asking for. In fact, that's how the majority of nations all around the world have significantly reduced their gun deaths, by changing the environment in which guns could be owned, not by dividing people into good guys and dangerous people and only focusing on dangerous people. That simply, you know, doesn't work in a country where, as I've said, two-thirds of the gun deaths are suicides. And then a final point about gun deaths in Chicago. They are high. It is a problem, but it's also the reality that 60% of crime guns in Chicago come from out of state. 20% of them come from Indiana. It's because Illinois is surrounded by states that have weaker gun laws. And so it's easy to get a gun into places where there shouldn't be any, which is why we need to raise the federal standard for gun ownership in America.
Jody, I'm going to ask the other part of Dave, you know, when Brent's call, and I'm going to ask you to deal with this quickly because we're getting close on time. Is the argument obviously that the government failed to do its job with the bump stocks, but then to some degree he's making an argument at the end that having a gun is a way to resist or serve as a check on that very government. I mean, it seems to me that there's some sort of internal contradiction there.
Yes, I mean, you have so-called insurrectionist accounts of the Second Amendment, and they've never been terribly popular. I think that if you look at defensive uses of firearms, although the numbers are controversial, they generally don't happen. That's you know, not the way crimes get thwarted, irrespective of those one-off stories that are published in the NRA magazines. As to the bump stocks, I think that goes to a larger issue. So I also teach products liability, and the government has a fairly hands-off, you know, view towards products, including chemicals. And if it's proven to be problematic, they regulate it. Bump stocks proved to be problematic, so they regulated them.
Well, I'm afraid that's going to have to be the last word. I feel like we could do at least another 3 hours on this. But I would like to thank my guests, Indiana University Maurer School of Law Professor Jody Madera, Director of Guns Down America Iger Volsky, and Moms Demand Action in Every Town volunteer Rachel Guglielmo, for what has been a very lively and informative conversation. I'd also like to thank our listeners for, as usual, some great questions and comments. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.